Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to another Press One for Democracy. Dan Aronson, host of Press One for Democracy. He heard here every Monday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. on the West Coast. And we have an interesting show, I think, for you today. We're going to talk about some movements and grassroots movements that have been created by forward-thinking people in order to get money out of politics, which, of course, is the number one goal of the Coffee Party. So I think we're going to be right on point, right on topic tonight. And tonight we're going to focus actually on Lawrence Lessig, his career in general, what he stands for, who he is, and we'll talk about his latest efforts, the May Day Super PAC. So, kind of an interesting thing, and we had an interesting concept or an interesting way to go about things. So we've had a lot of conversations over the couple of years that we've been on the air about how do we get money out of politics, what's the best ways. And one of the things that I have always been very steadfast in saying is that you got to have an inside game and you got to have an outside game, right? You got to have both, right? So we can have grassroots activism, and we can have people getting together in large numbers and making lots of noise, and that's great. But the fact is, if we're going to change the law, you also need politicians who are sitting in office to actually enact those changes. So, this is really, quite literally what the May Day Super PAC is all about, is about fighting fire with fire. Right, so we're using so Lessig's idea is to actually make or use money to get politics or to get the money out of politics. So using money to fight money by putting in people who are actually pledged and dedicated to the cause of getting money out of politics. So it's a very interesting approach, a little bit novel. But, instead of me sitting here and talking about it, I'm going to play a clip off of his website, and I will tell you, or I'll let Lawrence Lessig tell you what he has in mind and why and how he feels like we can or we should go about implementing his plan.
We need to take our democracy back. In a time of polarized politics, there's one thing that more than 90% of Americans agree on, that our government is broken, and broken because of the money in politics. Right now, Congress doesn't answer to us. It answers to the elite few. Members of Congress waste 30 to 70% of their time raising money from the tiniest fraction of the 1%. That gives this tiny fraction of the 1% enormous power in our government. And there is nothing more dangerous than a government of the many controlled by the few. They have the power to block climate change legislation and to block Wall Street reform. They stop the extension of unemployment benefits or aid to veterans while they and their cronies secure more than $100 billion in corporate welfare. Whether you're on the left or on the right, this system works against all of us. Now, they have this power because of the way campaigns are funded. And we won't get our democracy back until we change the way campaigns are funded. That's why we created the May Day PAC, a citizen-funded super PAC built by tens of thousands of small-dollar donations that will elect a Congress committed to fundamental reform in the way campaigns are funded by 2016. A super PAC to get rid of super PACs is good. Here's how we're going to do it. In 2014, the May Day PAC will run a pilot campaign in five key races. Prove to Washington that Americans care about this corruption that's how we win. In 2060, we'll lend one to as many races as we have to win a Congress committed to fundamental reform. There are already more than 200 members of Congress committed to this, but that's not yet enough. That Congress, the Congress we elect, will then pass legislation to change fundamentally the way elections are funded. And finally, when we have a Congress free of good money, the Congress free to lead, we will fight to preserve the reforms we fought so hard to achieve through whatever amendments to the Constitution are necessary. But we need your help to make it work. We must raise $5 million by July 4th. So give whatever you can, whether it's $1 or $100. And whether you can give or not, please share this video. This is the plan to get our democracy back. We still have that power, but it starts with you. Go to mayday.us and help us deprive that tiny fraction of the 1% with the power that we still have.
There you have it. Lauren Schleswig and his plea for this May Day campaign. And I think there's a couple of good takeaways here. So we have the fighting fire with fire idea. But I think the thing that resonates with me as far as, how this is really a message that should be resonating within all Coffee Party folks is that he's talking about a multi-partisan campaign. He's saying that it doesn't matter whether you're left, whether you're right, whether you're center, whether you're libertarian, Democrat, Republican, constitutionalist, Tea Party, it doesn't matter. If you're not part of that 1%, then you're fooling yourself into thinking that you have anybody in Washington, D.C. that is truly representing you. Okay, anybody, maybe that's an over-exaggeration. There are, I'm sure, a few good people in Congress that actually care more about what their constituents think and act more on behalf of their constituents than they do on the on the revolving doors worth of lobbyists that come into their office over the course of a couple years or 6 years, depending on which house you're sitting in. So I'm sure there's a few. I don't want to besmirch all of them. I don't want to throw out a couple of the good apples with the rest of the nasties. However, the fact is that the vast majority of these people, and it's been many, many, many years going on now, some say 35 back to the beginning of Reaganomics, some say more like 50 or 60 back to the start of the military-industrial complex dominating, which still, of course, is dominant today. That needs to stop. We need to stop this. So again, you're listening to Press One for Democracy. You just heard from Lauren Schleswig on his campaign on May Day, but we want to hear from you because, as I am fond of saying, nobody wants to sit here and listen to me yap for an hour and a half or 2 hours. So please do call in at 646-929-2495. That's 646-929-2495. And when you get into the queue, the nice lady will tell you press 1 if you want to speak to the host. That's me. And we will get you into the conversation as soon as we can. So looking forward to that. One of the things that I just wanted to share with you, another little piece of information that came out of the May Day PAC news today, and that is that they are now that today they announced 3 new campaigns that the May Day PAC is going to be supporting. And if you go to the May Day campaign, or actually any of Lauren Schleswig's like his Facebook page, and you like it, you can get a newsletter and you can be kept up to date on all this stuff. But the letter today came out, said, "I'm writing to tell you that there are 3 new campaigns that we are announcing support for today. And to announce that because of all the support we've received, we've decided to expand the number of campaigns we target this cycle from 5 to 8. So remember, Mr. Lessig talked about the fact that they were doing a limited targeted campaign kind of a proof of concept, if you will. And now they've decided to expand that from 5 to 8. So today they announced support for, in the general election, Carol Shea Porter, Democratic from New Hampshire's 1st District, and Walter Jones, Republican from North Carolina's 3rd District. So right away we see it's not about left or right. It's not about how you feel about women's right to choose or gun control legislation. It doesn't matter. What it's about is we need to get money out of politics first. Then we can fix all of the other things that we need to fix because we'll be in control. You know, we can sit here and have all these conversations on the radio week in and week out, whether it's about gun control, whether it's the women's right to choose, whether it's about equal pay, whether it's about voter restriction. We can have all these conversations, but until we come to the realization and admit to ourselves that we're just talking amongst ourselves and nobody in Washington is listening, you know, until we come to that realization, we're really just not going to get anywhere, right? So and the third candidate they're supporting is Ruben Gallego, Democrat from the Arizona 7th District, and he is facing a Democratic primary against people that against opponents that are not actually for campaign finance reform. To give you a little bit more background, Carol Shea Porter, Walter Jones are incumbents. They have been both leaders. They have both been leaders for reform. Walter Jones is the only elected Republican to co-sponsor the Government by the People Act. Before that, he was the only Republican co-sponsor of the Fair Elections Now Act. And he has had the courage to lead in his own party despite strong resistance from leadership. But reform will only happen, and here comes that message again, if it is supported by Democrats, Republicans, and independents. Carol Shea Porter has also been a leader in the Democratic Party, co-sponsor of reform legislation, a candidate who refuses contributions from PACs. She is a strong believer in ending the system of corruption in Washington and has been willing to talk openly in D.C. about exactly those terms. She talks the talk and has literally walked the walk. Twice I have had the honor of marching with her, marching with Congresswoman Shea Porter in New Hampshire in the New Hampshire Rebellion marches, once in freezing January and once in July. Finally, Ruben Gallego is a critical ally for reform. A former Marine and assistant minority leader in the Arizona House of Representatives, he will be a champion for reform in D.C. His opponent has been mired in conflict of internet interest scandal. Conflict of interest scandals. And we hope that because of our support, the voters in Arizona's 7th District will have a chance to support a committed reformer this November, and that the House of Representatives will welcome him to the 114th Congress. Stay tuned for the next three announcements, though they won't come until after we have a field staff in place, probably at the end of this month. The next three promises to be the biggest surprises and critical to our strategy to make fundamental reform possible. Our campaign in New Hampshire and Republican Senate primary begins this week, and there's a couple of radio ads, and there's links to those radio ads. There's just 1 month till the election, but there are some interesting surprises, again, still yet to come. Thank you for your support, et cetera, et cetera. Lawrence Lessig, Mayday PAC. True grassroots, I guess this is more like true grassroots democracy, right? So we have grassroots movements where we have people who are making statements, whether it be the Coffee Party, whether it be Occupy, whether whoever it is. But this is true grassroots democracy where we have thousands of small donations coming together and being sent out to people who are dedicated to a single cause. And I'm sure they're dedicated to other causes, but they have stated and the two of the three have actually been in the fight themselves to reforming the system and getting special interest money out of politics. So, again, this is Dan Aronson. This is Press One for Democracy. Looking for some people to call in. Let us know where you stand. Let us know if you're involved in the Mayday PAC. Let us know if you think it's a good idea, a bad idea. Do you have a problem with it? Do you find it a little bit hypocritical to fight fire with fire, or is it the only way to do it? And of course, there are other things like Represent Us with the American Anti-Corruption Act and other things. Tell us if you're involved in other ways of getting money out of politics. To give you a little more idea about who Lawrence Lessig is, he's a very interesting guy, a Harvard professor, and he's actually very much a self-identified progressive. But you'd be surprised, some of the issues that he's decided to take on. And a lot of them, to be honest, to be perfectly frank, a lot of the issues he takes on, he does so because he believes that these are things that are contributing where the government has tipped the playing field to the 1% and had a big hand in increasing the income inequality and wealth inequality in this country that so many other progressives and academics have spoken to the ever-growing divide in the United States as far as wealth equality is concerned. So, for an example, one of the things that he's openly spoke about is reducing legal restrictions as far as copyrights, trademarks, and radio frequencies. So we're talking about really pieces of legislation that have been put into place that have prolonged or extended a company's ability to basically profiteer by having the sole offering in the marketplace for 7 years or 17 years, depending on the copyright law you're speaking to, right? So he's all about reducing that. He understands that there's not that you need to have a payback. There are a lot of products, obviously, are very expensive to do R&D on and to develop, but enough is enough at some point, and he feels that there's usury in that system. As far as obviously increasing reducing the restrictions on frequency, radio frequencies, obviously that's another thing that's near and dear to the Coffee Party's heart as far as being the media. The more media sources that are out there, the more chances you're going to have to get not a specific outlet that's going to be fair and balanced necessarily, but if you end up crowdsourcing your news and listening to all the different voices that are out there, and you do have diversity within those voices, then you end up, in the aggregate, you end up with a much broader spectrum and a much wider number of views, which you can then assimilate down to and have a much better chance of being able to get to what is maybe the center, or at least you gain a great understanding of the total views, right, which is that's the transpartisan concept, is being able to listen to different people's views and be able to do it respectfully, and then you can then you're able to synthesize your opinion to that point. And with that, I will bring in our first caller of the night, area code 661. Your mic is hot. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking to?
Martin Jones.
Martin Jones?
Yes, I'm in Oxnard, and I hope I'm not getting too much feedback. I can hear
no,
you fine, but I can sense the delay. It's getting special interests out of politics can be a most difficult thing, even at the local level, which is where I've been for the last 20 years. And it's it takes persistence and endurance. And sometimes what you might think of as special interest isn't just money. It's public servants keeping their jobs. It's ignorant chambers of commerce that thinks the only thing you can do with vacant ground is cover it with concrete. It's a very difficult situation, and great endurance and persistence is required. And even I have sued the city I've lived in for, I've lived here since 1970. And it's no damn joke when you start talking about special interests. It's not just money. Power is involved. Money is involved. Keeping one's job is involved. It's very difficult.
No, and there's no doubt about that. And, you're right. Money and power, to me, especially, again, depending on which of the actors you're speaking to, right, if you're talking about the politicians themselves, yes, the money that they gain or the money, if you go to opensecrets.org, what I find is there's a neat chart that you can get on every single politician, and it actually charts their net worth. And, most of them do trend up and to the right during their time of service. But I think the idea that Lessig's trying to push is they're using that money to get reelected so that they can stay in power, so that they can then help their cronies, get what they want, right? Whether it's I want to build a parking garage, which is,
situation in the city I live in, a parking garage and a theater. It was $1 million a year guaranteed to open the theater. Guaranteed. No bank would make a loan on a theater. And it's just rather interesting as to how these things work. But right now the politicians have a problem of running for office. Re-election is on their minds more than anything else.
And in order to do that, all the data points, or most of the data points say that you need the money. You can't do it without the money. And so without real reform in the election process, that doesn't happen. I just out of curiosity, you said you're in Oxnard, California?
Yes, I am. I can tell you all about Oxnard.
I'm sorry?
I can really tell you all about Oxnard.
Okay. Have there ever been whatever they call local legislation? Has there ever been local legislation ever offered up to reform campaign finance in local elections?
Not that I can recall. I did get up a petition for council districts a few years ago. That cost $6,000, and I was really kind of stupid to think that the people would go for it, but for the simple reason the council came out against it, the city council. Well, of course they would when you give it a little thought. If we had council districts rather than elections at large, why would they be for a change? They know how to win in the present system. They're certainly not going to endorse replacing it with council districts. I was quite naive in that. I thought the people might go for it. Right now, 10 years later, 12 years later, whatever it is, people that are running for office are answering to the question at forums, are you favored in council districts? And they all say yes, but they don't get elected. The incumbents are not going to do anything about putting forward council districts to the people. But it's the only way that I know of where the average citizen would ever have a chance to have their voice heard. And the funny thing about that is we have supervisor districts in Ventura County, and people seem to like that okay, but not council districts in their city. And it's that's something that costs $6,000, and I wish I had the money.
Okay, so just so I'm understanding exactly what you're talking about here, so it sounds like that in the entire city, you just kind of toss your name into the hat for city council, and then everybody votes for like the top six people that they want.
But what you're saying, whoever gets the most votes.
Right. So, and then but it's the top six vote getters, and then everybody's lumped together versus having something districted like Congress, like congressional races, where you have people going head to head, representing a smaller piece of the overall city population.
Right, and there have been lawsuits, at least in California, where you've got a sufficient number of minority, a sufficient population of a minority that doesn't have any representation on a city council where there is not council districts. Lawsuits have been won by people that bring that kind of a lawsuit. The way Oxnard is set up, let me think about this. It's a general law city. And a general law city in California, you have to have 7 elected officials, a mayor, 4 council members, an elected treasurer, and an elected city clerk. In this city, the good old boys managed to make certain that the elected treasurer and city clerk are get the votes. We've got, for the last 20, 30 years, we've had an elected treasurer that didn't know the law of California and didn't even know what a hedge fund is. It's and of course, the council controls that elected official because the council determines how much pay the elected official receives, both clerk and treasurer. So you don't have truly elected officials as clerk and treasurer that are independent because you control them through their paycheck. And so it can be a very it all depends on who you elect. Are they honest or are they corrupt or corruptible? And it's clear that I know at least 2-3 council people that had a clear view of what they wanted to do before they were elected, but they have great difficulty afterwards. No matter what they want to do, they have to get 3 votes on the council. And everybody has their own special interest, it seems. One council person, it's affordable housing. Well, that's almost virtuous, I suppose. But then they have to negotiate with others that are really just want to keep the old guys in the old power structure in effect, even though they've been voted out of office. There was quite a scandal a couple of years ago, and the DA investigated along with the FBI, and there was a number of recommendations, but it did not get picked up, to my knowledge, by the Department of Justice. If it were to be, I would assume and hope for some past public officials ending up in prison.
Yeah, it's amazing how that, like, never happened.
Yes, it is. But if anybody's interested that's listening to your show, I can say go to the archives of the Ventura County Star Free Press and just enter a few things like Holden, District Attorney Totten. It's there to be read.
So let me ask you this question then. You sound like you're angry, fed up, and you have been for 20 years. What is it about the people of Oxnard that is it they don't care, they're disconnected, they have bigger things to think about in their lives? Why isn't anybody doing anything about it, or are people doing things about it?
Well, that's a good question. And some people deny this, but we have a fairly large Hispanic population. And if you have a name like Jones, they're not going to vote for you, or very few will. They have to know you and respect you to get a vote, unless your name is like Zaragoza or Herrera. Both have elected positions. That's one aspect of it. Then you've got the Chamber of Commerce. I was a member of the Chamber of Commerce for a little while. And what you've got there is it's controlled by, and their numbers have fallen. They used to have maybe 1,200 members, but now it's down to like 500 or 600, and controlled mostly by developers. And it has a number of explanations, your question, or answers to your question, and it's difficult to answer in one complete explanation. And I suppose I don't really have a great answer, but I do know that if there were council districts, and the way I had set it up, I went to a lawyer and told him what I wanted. I wanted council districts where you could actually, a grassroots guy could go and knock on every door in his district and say hello to every resident at every house. And the way you work it in California, I don't know about other states, but when you go ahead and have council districts line drawn, you have to count every soul. That's baby to great-great-grandparents, every soul. But then you go to the registrar's office and you see how many voters are in each district. Then you divide, then you determine the number of districts you want to have, and you want them as small as possible so that a grassroots guy could cover every house in that district within, let's say, 6 months or a year, less than a year. Okay, so I worked it backwards, but you also don't want to have 18 council members. You want to have a reasonable number, 5, 6, 7, something like that. So at most you'd want 7 districts, and the way I look, the population at a time, it has to be based on the census. My census was based on the year 2010. So all of that's old hat. That wouldn't work. Now, if you were to do it today in California, it'd be the census of 2010.
2010, so, right.
Okay, did I say 2010? I did on the census.
No, you did. You're right.
Okay, well, anyway, that's how it worked. And I had it figured out to where in one district, you only had about 700 registered voters. So you could easily cover that on foot by a candidate. So that was my way of trying to bring democracy to the citizens of Oxnard. And, the people did not go for it. One guy I know, his name was Romero, and he's a nice guy, a political activist and so forth. But he, when he saw the petition, he said to me, they're trying to gerrymander us. And I looked at him and I said, do you know who wrote this? And he said, no. And I said, I did. Well, that changed his perspective real quick. But that was just one guy. So
yeah, that's interesting.
It's a difficult road if you really want to change things at a grassroots level. And to me, Oxnard is a microcosm of what's wrong with the country.
A lot of things are interesting. So just if you're just tuning into us, this is Press One for Democracy. You've got your host, Dan Aronson, talking to you from Portland, Oregon. We're chatting with Martin from Oxnard, California, who's been a very involved citizen. And by the way, congratulations on not giving up. 20 years of fighting a good fight. That's pretty impressive. I think you are to be congratulated for that. So while you were chatting, I pulled up some statistics about Oxnard, and just to give the people that I, just to give you your bona fide. So the leading, if you look at populations by race, you're looking at 145,000 Hispanics. The next largest population, 96,000 whites or Caucasians. So you're looking at a very large dominant Spanish population or Hispanic population, a little over 5,000 African Americans, 14,000 Asian Americans, and then 3,600 Native Americans. So, one of the things that strikes me about your plan is that, I'm going to make an assumption here, and please correct me if I'm wrong. But typically, when you have these kinds of racial diversity, ethnic diversity, religious diversity within a community, you tend to have neighborhoods that are kind of – the neighborhoods become a little bit more homogenous, right? So you have areas –
Not in Oxnard. I wouldn't agree to that.
Really? So you really – because really diverse, and everybody's kind of sprinkled in all over the place and –
Well, no, maybe I misunderstood.
What I'm saying is that you have Spanish neighbor, you have Hispanic neighborhoods, you have your white neighborhoods, you have your black areas of town, you'll have – that's what I mean, is that people typically will kind of, clump together with those like them, right?
Yes. The exception would be the blacks. They populate most areas of the city. The Hispanic concentration is in south, southeast, and east Oxnard. There is one area of Oxnard known as the La Colonia, and it's almost, I would say it's 100% Hispanic. And it's now the thing is, nobody, you're not going, no one's going to bring a lawsuit to have council districts in Oxnard, because on the council we have had black people and Hispanic people and white people, so they have had representation. Unfortunately for the Hispanics in this town, they believe, and apparently they believe, that if you've got a Hispanic name, you will be supportive of them. And the Hispanics I know that are politically active know that that has not worked to their advantage at all in this city. So it's just kind of a pity that more people aren't really interested in what happens at City Hall. I'm very interested in what happens at City Hall, and I got into it quite by accident. I was sitting peacefully at home when a butcher from New York, a Jewish fellow named Karen, knocked on my door, and he told me he needed my help. And I told him I'd give him, I said to myself, okay, Oscar, I'll help you. And I thought to myself, I'll give him 6 weeks of my life, and that's it. That was over 20 years ago. Oscar has since gone on to his reward, whatever it may be. But most people just don't give a damn. And the Democratic Party in this city is the least active political organization I have ever seen. And I have been to numerous Democratic meetings in this county, and they are all more active and have greater participation in local politics than the Democratic organization in Oxnard. They talk a lot, but they do damn little. So I don't know, you know, what do you do to get people involved?
Well, okay, that is the question, right? And I guess in a from a transpartisan perspective, typically it's easier to get people involved in local politics because you end up sharing the same resources, right? So, like for instance, schools. It doesn't really matter what your political philosophy is. If you have children that are going to public schools, then you want the best public schools for them, right? I mean, so you're all about,
yes, let's
do whatever we need to do to get the public school system up to snuff. And that breaks down across all party lines and all ethnicities. And all, I mean, if you value education, then that should be something that the community should agree on as a whole. So I think sometimes, and again, I'm just not that familiar with Oxnard and the way it breaks down as far as Democrats and Republicans or Tea Partiers, or I don't know what the local political map looks like.
Okay, well, let me say this. These offices that I've talked about are nonpartisan, but that's a myth. We had a guy, well, Mayor Holden. Anybody that wants to take a look at Mayor Holden's record, I suggest taking a look at the FPPC investigation of the city of Oxnard. Take a look at the Ventura County Star Free Press, Oxnard edition, and take a look at the guy's past record. It's not very complete as reported, but I can tell you the guy ran and pretended to be a Democrat for years. But right now he's endorsing a Republican for assembly. Which is a partisan office. Nonpartisanship at the local level is pretty much a myth. They're not really nonpartisan.
So
they depend on their associates to get them elected and get money.
Right. And Erica, through and through, we're coming to you next. Just hang on for half a second while I explain to Martin transpartisanship. So one of the coffee party pillars of the coffee party is to be transpartisan. And what transpartisan is not the same as nonpartisan. The transpartisan acknowledges the fact that everybody, you know, has their own personal political philosophy. And you can map it out. You can try to graph it and map it out here or there. It typically changes with the issues, right? You know, I'm sure you know a lot of people like me that are more fiscally conservative but socially liberal. So, but the point is that it acknowledges that we all have these different have different partisan positions on many of the issues, but what we need to do is let's sit down and look for the common ground, and let's look for areas that we kind of both have skin in the game, right? Like I said, like public schools, right? I mean, locally, people want good public schools. Well, so that's something we should be able to work together on. You want good services, right? You want, I don't know if garbage removal is a city thing, but you want good, you want that. You want maybe a public transportation. You want good public transportation. So there's certain things that regardless of whether you're red or blue or purple or green, right, whether you map that, wherever you map out on the political spectrum, you share those common things. And that's what transpartisanship is about. It's not about being nonpartisan. It's about being able to listen respectfully and work together for the betterment of the common good. So I don't know if that's something that I'm sure you've seen issues where people of all different political philosophies have gotten together and said, hey, yeah, this is a no-brainer. We all have to get behind this.
Well, I would like to – my experience is in Oxnard. I was born in Los Angeles. I was used to council districts. I was used to a board of supervisors with districts. Coming to Oxnard, I didn't know for many years that it's elections at large. Of course, when I moved here, the population was only around 60,000 people. Oxnard today is about, the 14th largest city in California. And to have a city this large, you've got to have, it's very difficult to get common agreement on many issues. We know we've got one of the worst road structures in the county. I personally have the worst road in my neighborhood in the city. And we have, some years ago, there was a neighborhood council program set up, and the idea was it was going to be a substitute for council districts. Well, as a substitute, it had no power whatsoever. It could only make recommendations to the council. So it didn't work very well. And if those precincts that vote, and remember, elections at large, those precincts that vote, that's where the advertising, the money, and the knock on doors go. The La Colonia area, mostly Hispanic, I said earlier, 100% Hispanic, no white people are not going to go knock on doors in that area. It would be pointless. And they do not understand, apparently, that voting for a guy like Zaragoza, he was city councilman for 8 years, and I worked for him, worked in his campaign. You can't, and now he's elected to the Board of Supervisors of Ventura County. I can tell you this, a very nice guy, but you can't hold him accountable for anything because stupid is not a crime. He's not a very bright guy. He never had an original idea that I know of. But he didn't do anything for his Hispanic constituents either. He always voted with the power structure on the city council. And that was Herrera, Mulhart, and Holden. And if you look at the DA's report, Ventura County District Attorney, you'll get a flavor of what they were about. So I really don't know how to make a strong point here and how to get people together to end corruption in a city this size with elections.
Well, I would leave you with this thought, Martin. It sounds to me like the country, it is a microcosm of the country, and that the first and foremost problem you need to tackle is participation. And if people aren't going to participate in the system, then the system's not going to work, right? And so, as long as we have elections where we're having 50, 60% voter turnout, that it's going to be hard to get anything done from a grassroots level. I mean, if people won't even show up, once a year, once every 2 or 3 years to vote, that's a problem. So, it's about getting them to have skin in the game. Martin, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I hope you will come back and visit us, but I've got to get on to my next caller, area code 313. You are live on the air with Press One for Democracy and Dan Aronson. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking with? Here we go, 313. Your mic did not go hot. Now your mic is hot. Here we go.
Okay. Yeah, it's Mike Wilde up in Lansing, Michigan.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
No, not too bad. I'm one of the coffee party's new tech support people and working on the new version of the website. But like everybody, I have opinions. I probably have, too many opinions. But I'm going to take this to a national level, and cover a couple different areas. Where first, I think everybody is probably aware of the study that's coming out by two gentlemen from Princeton. I've got two monitors up here, and I've got so much stuff I can't hardly read it. But it says that America is really no longer, I mean, it states that America is really no longer a democracy, and we are an oligarchy. And that is going to be presented this fall at a, let me pull it, see if I can pull it up, at the fall 2014 In Perspectives of Politics. The two gentlemen who are going to be presenting that are Martin Gillens from Princeton University and Benjamin Page from Northwestern University. And the title of their presentation or their study is Testing Theories of American Politics, Elites, Interest Groups, and Average Citizens. Basically, we have lost control of our country. I mean, as a general citizen, as any citizen, it's big money that now controls who gets elected in our country, and that is what is driving politics. Basically, as far as where the big money is going to go, who they're going to support, who they're not going to support. And they end up with organizations that are under the 501c4 title, the IRS title. And so the donors don't have to be, identified. Basically they're hidden. It doesn't mean that all 501c4 groups are bad by any means, but in this instance where we have some big money that is really controlling things, and thanks to the Supreme Court, Citizens United decision, that has now allowed this to be where a corporation can be contribute to campaigns because they are considered an individual, and so as an individual basically you can give as much money as you want to a campaign. So what happens in a 501c4 that we're seeing, like from Citizens United, is that you are not really allowed to promote a individual, a candidate. So what happens is that they put up attack ads on the opposing candidate, and it covers a lot of different issues. That's there. But the problem that's also arising out of this is not just from the presidential Congress and judicial sections, which of course Supreme Court judges are appointed, but their decisions also now affect superior court judges in different states. A superior court judge now has to raise a tremendous amount of money to get themselves elected. So what is happening is that we're seeing large law firms, donating money to judicial races, and so in order to get elected, basically you're going to have to get in bed with the devil to get elected, and so what these people are not supporting judges based on, basically not getting anything out of it. They expect to get something out of it. And, in fact, that has happened.
Now this is the whole crux of the matter of Citizens United was they said that the mere appearance of impropriety was not enough, that there actually had to be, you had to be able to prove quid pro quo, right? Like, you hand me a bag of money and I get you a no-bid contract. That you had to have something like that. So if we can't, if you talk to any lawyer, and I've talked to a lot of different lawyers in the field, that proving that, they say, is extremely difficult. It's almost like, the only guy that I can think of recently that had that happen to him was Blagojevich, right, from Illinois, the governor. But he was caught on tape, right, saying, hey, we should sell the seat for $250,000. We should sell the Senate seat for $250,000. So with anything short of that, it's very difficult. So what Lawrence Lessig is trying to do, and what the people that represent us are trying to do, and Move to Amend are trying to do, is saying we obviously can't solve this from a judicial standpoint. We need to do this legislatively speaking. And so I'm just curious, are you involved with the Mayday PAC? Are you involved with Represent Us? Are you involved with Move to Amend? Are you involved in any of those movements that are trying to say, okay, we're not going to try to do this to the court system because now even that's corrupt. Let's do it legislatively. Are you involved in any of those things?
That's true. That's true. I think today, I think many years ago, transpartisanship would have worked on something, but I honestly don't believe transpartisanship is possible right today. People are too polarized, and so what you're seeing happening is politicians, jumping on bandwagons just to get elected. Let's face it: as soon as a president or anybody is elected, the very next day they start running for re-election. And that's what's happening. And so in a lot of instances, basically they're to be able to get themselves back in, they're going to have to be supported by a particular group of people. And it doesn't matter, mainly, I'm looking at, the political right. But it's also happening on the political left. And what Larry Lessig is trying to do is basically fight fire with fire. That's the only way that this is going to get done. You're probably aware of Wolfpack and their efforts to try to get, the 28th Amendment, passed through and get enough states involved where we can have a constitutional convention to get that happen. But within each state, you have the organization ALEC, working, the organization, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and they're corporate funded. And basically what they do is they put up boilerplate, legislation, and ALEC is basically, if you were to take a cross-section, if you were to take a look at any state legislator or legislation, basically, the people who are ALEC attendees or go to these ALEC conventions, if that's exactly how they're formed, are mainly Republicans. If that being the case, they're going to be ready to trip up anything that happens. The talk about that has already been going on. That the whole idea of having that is a great idea, of having a constitutional convention. But I can tell you from the state of Michigan, which is both legislations are the House and the Senate, state Senate, are both controlled by the Republicans. We have a Republican governor, and there's not a chance. I'm sorry, but there's not a chance in hell of that going getting through this, you know, on this state, and it's just not going to happen. So, you know, what Larry is trying to do, I believe, is basically fight fire with fire. And that, you know, basically that's really what I, you know, what I wanted to get through. I mean, I've got a bunch of things up here, you know, I mean, conflict of interest at the Supreme Court level, where you have two Supreme Court justices attending Koch brothers meetings. Now, I'm just going to put it out. Scalia and Thomas attend Koch brothers meetings. Now, how is that not a conflict of interest?
I don't know. That's a good question. Why is that a conflict of interest?
Well, I mean, if they're attending Koch brothers meetings, and we already know what the Koch brothers are all about, and the power that they actually wield, and that is very suspicious, you know, since they put up a lot of money to support Citizens United.
Yeah, no doubt about that, and McCutcheon.
Yeah.
I would need to know what the contents of the meeting are, what the agendas was. I mean, again, to me, if we can show quid pro quo, or if we can show that they were definitely discussing their judicial agenda, you know, if they were talking about like the lawsuit against President Obama, right? That they're trying to push now. I mean. Then yeah, I mean, it would seem to me that would be I don't know that that's conflict of interest. And again, I have a Holiday Express knowledge of the law thanks to my father being a law. It sounds like maybe ex parte communication. I mean, it could be a lot of different things, but it certainly sounds fishy. But
right.
That's something I would have to research more before I made any kind of judgment on.
And I think the deeper you read it, there are some really good documentaries that have been put out by both Frontline and Bill Moyers that are worth worth watching. And one of them is called Justice for Sale, which that talks about the subject that I started out with about as far as justices were concerned. Yes, this is extremely suspicious. I mean, I don't see how anybody can honestly come out and say that they didn't have an impact on their decision making.
You just made the huge leap. You went from it looks suspicious to, oh, well, it had to have some effect. The latter has, yeah. You have to have proof. I mean, that's the snipe that's out there, right? That's the snipe hunt you go on. You have to figure out how you prove that, and that's very difficult to do. So I think, again, we're back to the same point where the Lessig is trying to make, the Move to Amend is trying to make, the Wolfpack is trying to make, that which is, forget the courts. We're not going to get, certainly until the balance of the court changes, we're not going to get, and when I say we, I mean like the 90% of Americans that want to see fundamental change within the way we hold elections, with the way they're funded, within the way that, rules for lobbyists, et cetera. I mean, yeah, the 90% of us that want that change, we're not going to be able to get it judicially. And that's the whole point. So, and which is why I asked you if you were involved in any of those things locally, other than the coffee party.
I belong to Wolfpack, and where legislators are called. I call legislators, you know, all the time. You know, all the time. And there's a group of people that are doing that, and they, you know, their WOPAC is a non-funded. They're a nationwide organization, and that is trying to get this going. And they don't, and they're doing it without any funds. This is completely volunteer, and you know, as a volunteer, you know, what you try to do is contact your state legislators, you know, to get things going. But you know, I've come to the conclusion, and I'm old enough to see what has happened, you know, through, you know, politics, you know, for the, you know, ever since, I definitely remember, you know, and was old enough to remember when John F. Kennedy was killed, but I've also seen how things changed. You know, when Richard Nixon was in, and we had a Watergate, and yeah, you're not guilty, and you know, I mean, you're innocent until proven guilty. But you know, he was impeached. You know, and or you know, I try to remember if he resigned before he was impeached, or if he knew impeachment was coming. You know, and of course, impeachment doesn't mean that you're out. Impeachment means that you go to trial. Clinton was impeached, and you know, but you know, the Senate found him, you know, not guilty, you know, and he was able to remain in office. So, you know, this is, you know, I'm kind of going around, you know, on, you know, the roundabout way that I've seen things change. I especially saw things change when I got out of the Navy, and I worked in aerospace for an aerospace firm. And at that time, when I got out, was when Ronald Reagan was elected, and trickle-down economics started coming. And basically, that's still that's why we don't see any tax cuts for the wealthy right now, is because there is that belief that, you know, or push for trickle-down economics. But as we've seen, you know, over the last several years, many years, you know, that it really simply does not work. So giving tax, you know, now, you know, giving tax.
Well, I would disagree with you. It absolutely works for the 2%. In essence, trickle-down economics was a lie of the greatest magnitude. Because what it was trickle-up economics, and that's all it's ever been. So,
right.
So yeah, it works if you're at the top. But then government works if you're at the top, and I mean, everything works if you're at the top, right? Because and then when right. It doesn't work, you just go, you just pick out the people in Congress that are voting against what you want, and you target them, and you get somebody in who will vote for what you want.
Right.
We turn into the ultimate golden rule. Our government has turned into the ultimate golden rule, and you, as the gold, makes the rules. Mike, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Any parting thoughts for us?
No, except I think we're heading into very dangerous times, very, very critical times here. Probably the most critical that I have seen in my lifetime. I'm 60 years old. I don't remember any time where I thought the decisions that are going to be made in the next few years are going to have such serious ramifications.
Could not agree with you more. Could not agree with you more. Mike, thanks so much for calling in. That's been Mike from Lansing. So we've had two great callers. We've had Mike from Lansing, and we've had Martin from Oxnard. They've been long time involved, and really that's what it's about. And I think Mike brings a great point to the table. And if somebody wants to get in on the discussion, it's 646-929-2495. Otherwise, I'm going to go ahead and just start wrapping it up.
We've had a pretty good hour-plus conversation here. But I think Mike actually brings up a great point, and that is that, you know, the decisions that are going to be made over the next 2014, but then obviously huge, 2016 just going to be a huge year, are really going to do one of two things. It's either going to open, let's call it tear the roof off of things and shine the light of the people into what goes on in Washington, D.C., and start tearing down some of these institutions that are totally propped up by corporations, big business, anti-regulatory, anti-climate change deniers, and all of these other people, or it's going to be the final nail on the lid of the coffin, which will put the people in, which will lock the people inside into this world where their voice just doesn't matter. If you don't have the money, your voice doesn't matter. You know, money is speech. Well, money is volume, right? And the more you give, the louder your voice is and the more you're heard. And if you don't have enough to give, well, then you just don't to get a voice in it. And which brings me back to my biggest pet peeve, as my regular listeners will tell you, which is the participation levels in our country, in our government, in our democracy stink. We have these low voter turnouts. I always go back and love to say that 90 million eligible voters, 90 million plus eligible voters didn't even bother showing up in 2012. If you recall, President Obama won with about 63 million votes, which means that every one of those 90 million people had walked into the voting booth and voted for Mickey Mouse, just written in Mickey Mouse, we'd all be living in the United States of Disney. We people just have to realize that we are at these end of days. I don't want to sound apocalyptic about it, but we are at a fork in the road. And if we do not choose the right one, we are toast. So with that, I do have a new caller that wants to get in the conversation. Eric, 617, your mic is hot. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hi, Dan. It's Kathleen from Massachusetts. How are
Hello, you? Hello, Kathleen from Massachusetts. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good. You must have heard the wolf pack calling because the gentleman on before you is a big wolf pack fan, and I know you are as well, so...
I've heard a lot more people mentioning it, which is interesting.
Then again, I didn't want to pigeonhole you into what you wanted to talk about. What do you call it to talk about? The May Day PAC or Lawrence Lessig or some other movement to help get money out of politics?
No, well, a little of each. First, I wanted to let you know here in Massachusetts, they just passed the Disclose Act. The legislature did. So it's on its way to the governor's desk, or could be sitting on his desk right now. they passed it the last day, excuse me, of the session. It came out July 31st.
So what are the prognosticators saying? Will it pass through the other chamber? And if it does, and it lands on the governor's desk, will he sign it?
He will sign it. Yeah.
Okay. What about getting through the other chamber?
What's that?
Maybe I misunderstood what you said. Did it go through both the State House and the State Senate? Approved it, and now it's just waiting for signature by the governor?
Yeah, correct.
Oh, that's so exciting.
It is, but, you know, I haven't seen the final text of it, and I'm by no means a lawyerly person, so a lot of it is worded in a way that I can't understand it. I'd need somebody to translate it for me. Some pieces of it look good. Others... I don't think they went far enough, of course, but but that's my perspective. The only thing that would make me happier is if they corrected, the Supreme Court decisions here on the state level. Then I'd be really happy.
Well,
but it's
so
something.
How so?
The governor is expected. He's expected to sign it when the legislature is back in session. So there's very little information on it and very little specifics. I had a post in my newsfeed from my representative, who was one of the co-sponsors of the bill. And, you know, I said kudos to him, you know. I'm like, that's awesome. At least it's something. So.
Well, I just found, what did I just find here? Just found what, no? Oh, it's the Sunline Foundation. I was looking for a full text of the bill.
Oh, I would send you the link, but I can't get into the chat room.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here, view this latest. Here it is. View the latest bill text. Well, yeah, it'd definitely be worth looking into. Now, of course, the interesting thing that will happen is once the governor signs it into law, how soon will it be in front of the Supreme Court, and what will they say about it?
Right. It's, you know, who knows what's going to happen with it. It's kind of too early to know. You
well,
know,
that's cool.
But,
well, what else do you have for us? Because I'll take that. I'll take that as good news.
Yeah.
So
no, it
you.
Is good news. Some of the, you know, I live in a blue state, and some of the people are not happy that it doesn't go far enough. And, you know, but you got to start somewhere.
You just reminded me of actually something that Lawrence Lessig said near the end of his speech, that when he gave the keynote address to the first Coffee Party convention, and very near the end of his speech, and this was right after the 2010 election, and he talked about the fact that. That the Republicans were all up in arms about cutting out all the pork barrel spending, right? All the earmarks. President Obama's response to that was, "Well, earmarks is just 2% of the overall budget. It's nothing." And what Lessig said was that was a big miss, not because getting 2% back in the budget would have been a big deal, but because that earmarks are they're crony capitalism embodied, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're crony capitalism personified. They are wheeling and dealing personified, corruption personified, and just on principle, there was a chance to strike at the heart of corruption, and the Democrats went, it's not that important,
right.
Because it's not a lot of money. So you're right about you got to start somewhere, because you've got to get your foot in the door if you want to get through the door, right? You've got to find a way to do that. So, you know, where do you find that crack? How do you, you know, wherever it is, I think you got to go for it. You got to be happy about it because it's progress.
Well, there are two things I would respond to that with. The first of which is that this is going to affect them. They're passing legislation that will restrict them and impose new laws regarding the disclosure of their donations. It changes the limits for the maximum limit was 500. Now it's up to 1,000. But as far as reporting, it's a little iffy. Because the fundraising from this year goes from January. It won't be released till 7 days before the primary. You know what? The governor had to have signed it then. Or maybe he's signing it in the midterm, in the meantime. But anyway, it's supposed to go into effect for this election cycle. But people will only have 7 days to look at who's donating. And but they also passed a piece on political advertising as well, and that the donors have to be listed.
Well, again, it sounds like landmark legislation that should bring us another round of lawsuits and challenges. But you know, as far as I'm concerned, the whole thing's a learning process, right? And every time you lose, you can make an adjustment. You can change your strategy a little bit so that the next time you don't get tripped up by the same technicality or the same precedents, right? So, I mean, the fact that it's moving forward, the fact that there are people that are crying out for it and that it's getting this, you know, that it's gotten this far, to me it's a big victory. And good on Massachusetts.
Yeah. Well, I found it interesting. Last year, last June, Wolfpack went to the public hearing they had on the proposed resolution for a constitutional convention. I'm sorry, a convention of the states. Blah, blah, blah. And I wonder if there's a connection between the two, because Lessig testified, a bunch of other people testified, and essentially we were saying to the state, we want you guys to take our side and help us fix, you know, campaign finance at the federal level. So I don't know if I'd be interested to research and see when this bill first came up. And that's about it. That's all I just wanted to let you know. Massachusetts is, they're trying.
Well, no, and kudos to Massachusetts, Kathleen, and thank you, as always, for calling in. Really appreciate it. Great to hear you.
Thanks, Dan.
All right. Have a great night. So with that, we're going to wind down the show. I would be remiss if I did not take a moment to share sad news. I usually don't like doing it on the show. I'm sure most of you by now have already heard it in this day and age of social media and how bad news as well as good news spreads fast, but we don't know bad news spreads faster. But we said goodbye, if you're not aware, to one Mr. Robin Williams today, who decided to take his own life. Apparently he was suffering from clinical depression. I have many, many thoughts about that. But obviously his wit and comedy and the truth behind his comedy will be missed, much the same as George Carlin's comedy is missed, because it's truth in it. You know, and I've always said that I'm jealous of comedians, because comedians, they're the only ones who really get to tell the truth and get away with it. And I've given them numerous examples of that throughout the years I've done this show. We will miss you, Mr. Williams. And obviously, you know, as with all suicides, the real victims are those left behind. And my heart and my sympathies go out to his family and his friends who now have to bear the weight of the decision that he decided to make. So, don't want to be a bummer, but I think that's the least I could do as far as getting the news out. So I really, though, appreciate all of my callers that have called in to discuss tonight's subject, which centered around the May Day PAC and the announcement of the three new candidates that they'll be backing, two Democrats and a Republican. And, to get that message out and to help really focus the message that it's going to take a united effort, and we're all going to have to come together and put down our swords for the time being so that we can get money out of politics so that we can then gain control of it. And once we do that, not only will we be able to fix the kinds of things that are wrong and re-level the playing field and maybe get some relief for Main Street this time instead of Wall Street. But if any of that happens, we are going to have to come together. We're going to have to kick out the corrupting influences in Washington, D.C., in our state capitals, even in our local city councils, as we heard
Martin talk about from Oxnard, California. So, you know, hopefully we all get behind the May Day PAC, Lord Schlesing, we get behind Represent Us, Move to Amend, all of these people, Wolfpack, that are looking to really strike a blow for justice and for justice for the people, because that, you know, that was Lincoln's summation, right? You know, it was a great experiment, and will the big question's now right in front of us again, and it's will a government of the people, by the people, and for the people perish from this earth? And frankly, I'm not going down without a fight. I know people like Kathleen aren't, people like Mike from Lansing aren't, people from like Martin from Oxnard aren't, people like Greg Rustick, who comes and lurks around the chat rooms but doesn't call in anymore. Seeing Greg, I just miss you. That's what the coffee party is all about. And speaking of which, if you want to get involved in the coffee party, if you like what we stand for, if you want to know what we stand for, go to coffeepartyusa.com. Go to the About page. You can read about our mission statements and our principles. And if you like what we're doing and you like the kinds of things we're promoting, then please feel free to hit the Join button and become a member and get involved in this. As Mike pointed out, very crucial time in our history. I think big changes need to happen, and if we don't all get involved and join together to get involved behind these causes, then they're not going to happen. We have to make them happen, folks. Again, this is Dan Aronson. You've been listening to Press One for Democracy. Don't forget the other Coffee Party radio shows on Thursday, Janine Loudon and Debbie Lynn Molino. Host Lunch with Loudon. That's at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon on the West Coast. And then 10 a.m. on the West Coast, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturdays, Egberto Willis does Politics Right. And that's always a great show and always fun and a lot of controversy and a great listen as well. So join all the Coffee Party radio shows, including this one, Press One for Democracy, heard every Monday at 9, and come back, and please, when you do and the little lady tells you you're listening, but press 1 to get into the conversation, hence the name of the show, Press One for Democracy. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful, wonderful night and a wonderful week. This is Dan Aronson signing off. Watching the ships roll in, then I watch them roll away again. Yeah. Sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide. My home.